Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know, the leaves
what's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the one, the only, the money strong Danielle DiMartino Booth with the new book Fed Up coming out on Valentine's Day. Danielle, welcome aboard.
Happy to be here.
You know, Danielle, I got to tell you, I watch you, I don't know, two, three, four times a week on Fox. And every time you're on there, you kill it. It's unbelievable to watch you work and the amount of knowledge that you bring with you. And I thought you did a great job, although it was a little short, but I thought you did a great job on lacquer and what the Fed is doing right here. What are your overall thoughts? Why don't you expand upon your thoughts now?
Well, now that I've got a few more minutes, huh? Look, I think that Jeffrey Lacker is, he did a very good job in front of Congress defending the Fed's independence. He might or might not, he did a very extensive interview with the Wall Street Journal. You can look up the entire transcript of that interview. He might have defended the what the Fed did during the crisis years, and especially what the Fed did in the years that followed the crisis year. Yeah, years he was very diplomatic in saying, you know, we thought we were doing the right thing. Whereas I think if he was not a Fed president and he was like a Richard Fisher or a Charlie Plosser, he might be a little bit more forthright in saying, you know what, we did too much. Sometimes it's the courage to not act, which is obviously the opposite of Bernanke's memoir titled "The Courage to Act." I mean, my premise on Fed policy is that less would have been more, and that today less would be more. But they've backed themselves into a corner.
No, and of course I agree with that part of it. And you know, you do a lot of great writing, and you know, I'm from the school right now that I think a lot of the stuff that the Fed did, but the businesses now have become too big to fail, yet we always worry about these monopolies. You know, we're seeing the thing going on with Bayer, Monsanto, and we've seen it with Walgreens and Rite Aid and many other companies, but yet, you know, the banks and Amazon and Walmart are all too big to fail. Where is the equilibrium in all that stuff that's going on? Why can I see that nobody else can see that?
Look, I think a lot of Americans can see it. I think that a lot of baby boomers especially can see it, and they're frustrated because they're going to live for a lot longer. So they're going to have to contend with the fact that they spent the majority of their life being able to go into a bookstore and converse with the owner, and that's no longer a viable option. Look, we have become an economies of scale economy. I know that's a mouthful. But that's what we've become, an economies of scale economy where only scale matters in terms of being able to be profitable. And in the case of Amazon, that wasn't even the case for a good long while. But the notion of you've got to put everybody out of business to do business, to me, that's a reflection of how much red tape there is in this country and the fact that only gigantic companies can succeed. But it'll put a knife through the heart of small businesses, which happen to be the backbone of America.
Which I could not agree with you more. I mean, you know, look, the whole economy grows off the middle class. You know, I always say on the show that the rich are going to buy what they're going to buy. They don't care. I mean, a good economy, bad economy, if you're truly rich, and I mean real money, not, you know, not the air money, but the real money, you're going to buy what you buy. You're going to buy, sell what you sell, and you're going to take advantage of when times are tough. And the poor that get entitled, they're going to spend every dime they have regardless. But the real builder of any economy always has to come back to the middle class and the entrepreneur. And we're not seeing growth in that part of it. And you wrote an article on the, I think you called it the Dirty Harry of Jobs Numbers.
I did, the Dirty Harry Jobs Report. I'm so clever.
So
okay, and bashful.
No, that we know. We can see that every day. You know, we know how shy you are and how retiring you are. But so tell us about what you're seeing there and why we need to get out of that the way that we're doing things, because we have to move past this so we can bring back the entrepreneur into the business world.
Look, I'm going to get a little bit too deep in the weeds here, but if there is a single sin that has been committed by the era of quantitative easing and zero interest rates, it's that it allowed Congress to sit on its hands while our education system in this country continued to fail. And it fails its elementary school students, its middle school students, its high school students. It doesn't train Americans in the STEM in the STEM fields, and that puts people into our higher learning and institutions, colleges and universities, who therefore are prepared to only study in fields that won't make them money when they graduate, but they graduate with debt. It is a very dangerous thing to do, to give Congress an open checkbook, because the borrowing costs for the country are close to the zero bound. All kinds of bad things happen, including the death of entrepreneurship in this country.
And that, I think, is becoming more of an epidemic proportions, and the lack of liquidity that the average borrower, obviously an average guy, really can't borrow any money, and that's creating a problem in the real estate industry, because now we're building, I believe, we're building a rent bubble. What do you think?
You know, I wrote about that this week, in fact, just the sheer wall of money that is being aimed at the commercial real estate sector, and the fact that developers have not been able to make the math work if they haven't been able to build luxury properties. So in quote-unquote affordable Dallas, Texas, you've got $1,700 rents for starter apartments. Well, I'm sorry, that doesn't have very much to do with the ability to earn an income that matches that rent. And I would absolutely agree with you that it has not only created a rental bubble in this country, to say nothing of what private equity did by rushing into the single-family rental market, but it has also been a source of stress for entrepreneurship, because you don't have that extra income that you can stow away and save your pennies, put your acorns away, so that you have whatever you need in a few years' time after being prudent to start that company.
And when we see this happening, that creates the much bigger problem. We know about the Fed. We know how you and I both analyze it. But the truth is, we have to get out of the way and create issues. You know, I do a lot of stuff in the agricultural field as well. And, you know, the banks are already panicking. You know, there's been a little bit of sell-off in the cattle markets, and the banks are already, you know, as I call it, they're puking it out, and they're forcing farmers to sell at the bottom of the markets here. And that's another problem, because there's so many regulations that the big guys come down on, and it makes it a much bigger problem for the overall banking system, doesn't it?
Oh, it does, and if you look at the flip side of it, and you see the sheer concentration of commercial real estate on some of these bank balance sheets, you really stop and scratch your head, and don't even push the button on farm subsidies. None of this has ever made sense. If you'll allow me a quick digression, my mother was raised by her grandparents, who lived through the Great Depression and watched FDR kill off the livestock and burn down the crops in the name of price fixing. These things never end well, and it didn't end well then.
And it will never end well, and that is one of the problems that we have. You know, we've got, in this first segment, we got about a minute or so. Tell us about the book Fed Up and why we all should have it in our libraries.
We should all have Fed Up in our libraries because it is a book that is written in plain English that explains not just what the Fed did prior to the financial crisis, but what the Fed did throughout the financial crisis, and most importantly, what it failed to do after, which was recognize its fallibility.
And, you know, it could be such a good organization, but somewhere between 1913 and 2016, they somehow got off track, and we're going to kind of figure out where. But we are with Danielle DiMartino Booth from Money Strong. You can catch her on Fox all the time. She is the known expert on the Federal Reserve. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwich. We're going to stop at every break, but make sure you go to libertytalk.fm so you can re-listen to Danielle, as well as The Bubba Show and The Sporting Edge. We'll be right back after the break with more from Danielle from Money Strong. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwich.
It's a time.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Danielle DiMartino Booth from Money Strong, the author of Fed Up, due out on shelves on February 14th, Valentine's Day. That'll be my Valentine's present. So, Danielle, we've got issues, and issues. No matter where you go, there's problems. But yet, we continue to hear from, you know, the news sources and from the government that everything's fine. We have no problems. Now, explain to me how they can continue to come out and explain that there's nothing wrong when you wrote the Dirty Harry jobs report and the jobs, I mean, I don't care what anybody says, they suck. And when you can't create more than 200,000 jobs, it's brutal, because I go back to days when we used to create 400,000 or 500,000 jobs in a month. What's going on here?
Well, you know, instead of looking back, let's look forward a little bit, because we had validation of what I noted in my piece, which is backlogs. There was a contraction in backlogs, and I'll put that, I'll translate that. That means that the pent-up demand going forward is disappearing. It's going away. And that was according to the manufacturing ISM report. But we got a follow-up with the non-manufacturing ISM report, which, if you listen to all of the pundits, they'll tell you, oh, but the service sector is doing fine. Well, guess what? We've also got slipping backlogs in the services area. And that means that as bad as the jobs have been in terms of the quality and in terms of the numbers, as you rightly point out, there are fewer of them in the pipeline as we head into the latter part of this year.
So is there... I mean, we know that it's always, life always comes down to two things. One of them is money. And right now, the average guys can't get it. We've gone through the entrepreneurship and the reasons why. Now, and you've talked with me before about how we're going to correct it, but where's the more immediate fix coming? You know, we've lost over the Obama administration so many jobs, and I contend that the jobs lost make more money than all the jobs that they've created, and that we've lost a lot of very high-paying jobs through the destruction of many industries, and we've replaced them. You know, we've lost $40-an-hour jobs and replaced them with $10-an-hour jobs, and that's not a good formula. And at some point, the whole economy has to collapse, because even the Fed can't print money forever, and you can't give entitlements forever. At some point, the debt becomes too big. How do we solve that?
The debt will become too big. The debt will become too big if interest rates are to rise even by the slightest amount. And that is the elephant in the room. And one of the reasons I think that the Fed has become so politicized is that they cannot raise interest rates, because then the debt overnight becomes so overly burdensome. But I will tell you, there is low-hanging fruit. There is a way to not tack on a ton more debt. There are public-private hybrid partnerships. There is a pipeline that can be built. There is infrastructure that can be repaired in this country. But I think it would take the private sector being part of it, because the more involved you have in terms of government and being part of a project, I don't care what you call it, I don't care which agency you're talking about, whether it's infrastructure or whether it's the Energy Department, the more involved government is, the less efficient it's going to be, and the more it's going to cost the taxpayer in the end. But there's low-hanging fruit that can get especially the demographic that's been hurt the most, which is working-age white males, that can put them back to work immediately.
Well, and, you know, I've said, you know, since 2010 or 9, and I have video to prove it, that really all we need to do here in this country is create the war effect, because the biggest unworking population is the people my age, you know, 45 to 65. And those are guys that didn't go to college, and they were making a nice buck because they were in manufacturing, they were machine toolists, whatever they were. And those are the perfect guys to rebuild the structure of America. So is that kind of what the lines you're talking about?
Of course there are. Look, who says that we were a country founded on people with four-year education? Don't get me wrong, I've got a lot of degrees, but I like to study. And I went to school and got practical degrees that will actually help me have a career in the end. But who said that we've become some elitist nation that needs to churn out millions and millions of liberal arts degree majors that cannot contribute to the economy? And by the flip side of that, why is there any shame associated with having a top-notch infrastructure program? anybody I talk to who comes back from China will tell me that other countries that are that have built out their infrastructure in recent years make us a complete and total embarrassment on the global stage. Why on earth shouldn't we put our workers to work and become again a global superpower infrastructure-wise?
Well, I mean, I agree. I mean, I do not have a degree. I did not like to study. I mean, I like to open up my mouth and yell a lot. But I mean, you know,
But there are many different kinds of education, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, look, I know people who are more learned and book smart than people with 5 degrees. And I used to work at an institution with a ton of PhDs with absolutely no common sense. So there are different kinds of smarts in this world.
No, I mean, I've got 2 kids in college at a cost of almost $100,000 a year. One at Ohio State, one at Illinois Wesleyan. Okay. And, you know, I'm happy that they're going to college. I'm happy I could provide that education for them. But at the end of the day, okay, really, college is a great experience, and it's good for some social skills and learning. Again, there's a lot of degrees that are very important out there, engineering and things like that, and, you know, whatever they are. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm sending them because they can go, and my kids will both get, you know, good degrees. But at the end of the day, if they came out, they would both be $250,000 in debt. And, you know, it takes a long time to make back that $250,000. And there needs to be a better way for everybody. And somehow we've let these rising costs, these spiraling costs in education go bananas. And we really don't even teach in the schools, which you kind of brought up earlier.
Well, look, there was no some way, somehow we let the cost of education go spiraling upwards. Now, you might think that I'm a dog with a bone when it comes to the Federal Reserve. But think about the Greenspan era. And his main body of work was this little cottage area of study in economics called mortgage equity withdrawal. That's a way of saying homes were turned into ATM machines. You tell me if higher education inflation would have gone completely off the rails, and you can look at it on a chart, if homes had not been so easily capable of being cash machines. They wouldn't have had the same amount of money to throw at the universities. The inflation would not have run rampant.
And that's
just my humble opinion.
I agree. Listen, I love your opinion. I'm on board. I'm on the money strong bandwagon. Okay, I get it. And so, but now this is another issue that I have about inflation. Okay, now. I understand the definition of inflation, but I know that I'm making less money today and I'm paying more for everything that I use with the exception of TV sets. Okay? So how can we not classify that as an inflationary society, because prices keep going up. I don't see them ever coming down anywhere except the gas station, and they never come down far enough based on the price of oil.
I would agree with that. I would add, though, that food prices are flat year over year. But speaking as a mother of four, I think that that's more a product of the fact that egg prices spiked and that they've come crashing back down. Thank the Lord. But I will completely agree with you that the cost of most everything we need, even if you look at it in the CPI, even if you just look at the Consumer Price Index, which is, you know, arguably got its own set of flaws, healthcare inflation is 4% year over year. Rental inflation is 3.8% year over year. The cost of services in general is in that same vicinity, and yet our average hourly earnings are growing at 2.4%. That means, you translate it, that means you're falling behind. I don't care. I've got 8 TVs in my house because I've always got to have some financial news network muted in my home wherever I am. But it's not a financial burden to have 8 TVs because they're practically free. But who cares? What you need is cheaper college education for your kids. What you need is to not have to spend so much to put a roof over your head and to have a cell phone on your ear and to have internet service in your home and everything else you can name, to say nothing of stock and bond prices, which are completely haywire and not captured in anything that the Federal Reserve uses to gauge quote-unquote inflation.
Well, I've got 8 TVs and 6 monitors in my office. true story, it's football season. You know, the Texas Longhorns beat Notre Dame. How about that, huh? Are you hooking horns?
Oh, they certainly did. There's nothing like a double overtime.
Are you hooking horns?
Yes, I'm very happy. Hook them. That's my team.
All right, well, you know, did you go to Texas?
Of course I is.
Well, I mean, you were in New York for a while. You know, you listen. You know, you're.
I also have a second master's degree from Columbia University. I support New York as well.
Okay.
But when it comes to football, that's my team.
This is Danielle DiMartino Booth from Money Strong, and also the author of the upcoming book Fed Up, due out Valentine's Day. Always great to everyone. We're going to come back with her in a minute. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. LibertyTalk.fm lets you download the show every day, and we'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Danielle DiMartino Booth from Money Strong and the author of Fed Up, coming out Valentine's Day, as well as a Longhorn fan. And they did put a whooping on Notre Dame. What do you think of Charlie Strong?
Look, I have a favorite number in this world, and it is three. It is Charlie Strong's third year. We have got a rocking offensive coordinator. Somehow, some way, he's made two tango. And we've got two quarterbacks running at the same time. There's Razzle, there's Dazzle. As a longtime Longhorn fan who's been suffering, I'm loving me some Charlie Strong in his third year, and I'm liking what I see.
Yeah, and I like him too. I think I liked him. I liked the hire when they made it. I mean, I thought it was a great hire. So let's talk about Texas for a minute. You know, they just came out in, I guess, one of the papers. I guess they're a liberal paper. You know, I don't follow it that closely, but they endorsed Hillary Clinton. And I mean, Texas,
you know, I used to work for that newspaper. I'm happy I don't right now.
I mean, is Donald Trump that much hated? I mean, how can, in your opinion, obviously it's only your opinion, but I mean, how could Hillary Clinton be so much ahead and being endorsed by what you would consider publications that would be credible, but yet here's a person that is under pretty strict scrutiny and investigation, and done a lot of things that people have gone to jail for less, but yet she might be the next president of the United States of America?
Well, look, I truly think that Donald has his cray-cray moment, as my 8-year-old would say. Mom, that man's cray-cray. And I get that. But he's not criminal. And there's a big difference. And, you know, I see the difference in terms of all of these endorsements as a lot of what we saw headed into the vote in Great Britain. It behooves the establishment, and I hate to use that word, and it behooves the elite, and I really hate to use that word, but they sure are acting a lot like the British people, who all got hot under the collar at the notion of the people speaking for themselves on behalf of their country and their sovereignty and their ability to choose for themselves. And it truly angers me when you look at the full spectrum, from Wall Street to right here in Dallas, Texas, to a lot of longstanding Republican stalwarts vying for Hillary when they know darn well what she has done. It really is. It just gets under your skin when you read things like Colin Powell warning her, hey, don't cross the lines on this server thing. You be sure and you know, cross your T's and dot your I's. For him to come out and say, hey, I warned her. And yet, are we all truly supposed to look the other way and have the people who know best take our hands and pat us on the back of the hand and say, here, here, we know best. We know who you should vote for. I find it to be highly offensive.
I mean, and again, coming out of Texas, I mean, you guys stand up to everybody in Texas. I mean, you know, I remember the school thing with the transgender bathrooms, and they said, we don't want your money. Well, screw you. We don't want it. Okay, we'll do without it. And it's just, it's surprising because, I mean, forget about Donald Trump, the man, for a minute, but the ideals of him are, you know, really less government, right? And more freedom and more of, you know, what America was really destined to be when the original Constitution was written, right? I mean, so where did we run off track here with all of this extended, you know, term limits? I mean, I know you wanted to cut the terms back. We've talked about that before, but where do we run off track here and become more concerned about government instead of what the people should be doing and how we should be better?
Well, I think we ran off track when Washington, A, became entrenched in itself, and when even if you did leave office as a politician, you kept your address because you weren't going to go anywhere. You were just going to go on and become a lobbyist and cash in on that lifetime of experience. And, you know, at some point we became a country that was led by unelected officials, as in the lobbyists, and unelected officials who were all too happy to be their banker, that's otherwise known as the Federal Reserve, and it has just become too cozy and too easy to pat themselves on the back and do business as they please and leave the rest of America behind. It's a travesty.
It is, and this is something that bothers me as well. Now, do you chai from a financial standpoint? You know, everybody's talking about the stock market, and of course, Mark Cuban, the Dallas Mavericks owner, who's, you know, I know Mark, and I'm fairly disappointed in his actions, but either way, he says that if Donald wins, the market crashes, and if Hillary wins, it doesn't crash, and I say, I don't care who gets elected this time, the market's going to sell off, just like it didn't matter who was elected in 08, the market was going to rally. I mean, I believe that the actual president themselves have no basis on the outcome of what the stock market does. What do you say?
I say that whoever enters the Oval Office is going to be encountering a recession or an extremely severe slowdown. You know, it's interesting because Market, M-A-R-K-I-T, has been coming out with its own parallel surveys of the manufacturing and the servicing sector in this country. And the chief economist for Market a few days ago said, you know, with all due deference to the Fed's and the big brokerage firms' GDP estimates for the third quarter, we can't really make heads or tails of anything north of 1%. Well, if this economy has slowed down to a 1% rate for three quarters in a row, it doesn't matter who walks into the Oval Office. The stock market's going to eventually start selling off because you're going to see weaker non-farm payroll numbers going forward, weaker income gains than we've already seen that are anemic to begin with, and you'll see the consumer start to step back. And when that happens, that's the last thing standing between this economy and a recession.
Okay, so now I have said, and I can still contend, that we've never come out of the recession. If you're from the middle class, you have never left the recession, and I don't care what the numbers show, you've never left the recession. What do you say?
I would say that the median incomes show that the numbers show the same thing.
But why do economists, and I'm not talking about the Fed, but economists in general, why do they continue to say that we're in the road to recovery when we're so far from recovery that it's getting scary on the other side? And I can see a lot. I can see a repeat of anyone. Pick a crash, any crash. I can see a repeat coming, whether it be 6 months, 12 months, a week. Who knows? Nobody knows when, but I can see that happening at any time because we do absolutely nothing but try to pat ourselves on the back while we work on these ridiculous theories.
It's true, but you have to bear in mind, economists are looking at very old, dusty models of the income numbers in the aggregate. And if you look at a lot of the income numbers in the aggregate, then you see the people who have benefited, the very few people who have benefited from the increase in asset prices over the past few years. So if you're going to look at the entire pie but not try and distinguish between, as you mentioned, the lowest income people who can get by with the help of the government and all of its programs, if you don't mention, you know, the wealthiest people to whom the wealth effect has been the only beneficiary, and you just throw them all into the blender and just look at that number in the aggregate, sure, things are going to look great. But that certainly doesn't reflect what the average working Joe has experienced.
And that is my whole problem, is that the supporters of the economy are always the spenders, and the spenders are the people that go to they go to buy a new car, and they don't care how much the car is. They say, how much is it by the month? They go to the Best Buy, and Best Buy offers 90 days same as cash. They go, oh, okay, I can buy that. And, of course, that's only a way to trap them into paying a much higher interest rate later. But at the end of the day, we are a society that lives by the month. And that's when you get true growth, when those people are out spending. And those people, A, they're not spending, but they're really not spending because they're not making enough to spend. They got barely enough to put their kids through grade school, let alone go to college. What do you think?
Well, that's right. I mean, consider the city of Dallas. It's an extraordinarily low number of children who graduate college ready from the Dallas Independent School District, which means that if you're a middle income family in Dallas, you need to figure out how to cough up enough money for private school to fill up the gas tank, to put food on the table, and there's typically precious little left after that, and so you end up being a middle income earner with a subprime car loan paying through the nose. Again, I consider these things to be an outgrowth of overreaching Fed policy, and I don't use this word lightly, but I think they're criminal. I think it's criminal what's happened to the middle income earners in this country.
Well, I mean, the Fed is legally criminal. I mean again, they are running a legalized Ponzi scheme. I mean, anytime you can create new money to satisfy old debt, that is the definition of a Ponzi scheme, and you can paint it any color you want. I don't care what anybody says, and I obviously have said it on air, and I don't really care. I mean, that is what they have run. That is what they have built, and this will be the collapse that really started, I think, with who you mentioned in the beginning of the program, which is the Greenspan era. I mean, he was, you know, they've now become, instead of actually watching monetary policy, they become more of bubble builders. And to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense to what is going on. It seems to me that there's being more of an ability to build a socialism structure versus actual true growth, because every policy that we have seen from either the government or through the Federal Reserve has not benefited people that would actually spend the money. It actually benefited people that would hoard the money, and it will go into family wealth and never come out again. It's like when I traded on the floor, paper came in and it never went out again because the guys who took it down weren't going to let it go. And that is what is going on. But I got more for you. I want to talk to you a little bit about GDP when we come back from the break. We are with Danielle DiMartino Booth. Money Strong. You got to check out her articles. She writes the greatest articles. The Jetsons, and she always has a great theme with those, so make sure you check that out, as well as get your book ordered of Fed Up, due out Valentine's Day. It will be my Valentine's present. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out of her break. We'll be right back with more from Danielle. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Danielle DiMartino Booth. Money Strong, the author of Fed Up, worked for the Fed, been with the Fed, and pretty smart. She knows her stuff. All right, Danielle. So first I want to ask you about GDP. I say the GDP, the way it's calculated today, has now become an antiquated average. And really, we should figure out a different way to measure their true growth, because it's not even as good as the 1% that they're stating. What do you think?
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, if you look at gross domestic income and you compare that to gross domestic product in recent years, there's been a big disconnect. And I think that tells us that there's something seriously flawed in how it's being measured and that they need to go back to the drawing board. Again, it's the era of zero, low interest rates, whatever you want to call it, that has completely distorted not just the economic data that we see, but also the way that the economic data can be measured. I mean, look at what's happening in Japan. It's crazy over there because they have an economy that runs off of variable interest rates. Well, guess what? Variable interest rates don't work when interest rates are negative and you've got to go back to the drawing board and come up with a new mousetrap. In that same vein here, I think we need to come up with a new mousetrap, a new way to truly gauge economic output.
And hopefully we will do that because we have another major problem on the horizon, and that is the Social Security model, the regular pension model. I mean, I know that I think it's Central States pension fund is paying out, I believe the number is $3.84 for every $1 they take in. And we know that that is not long for the world. Give us your take there, please.
Well, look, and you know, on a fundamental level, it is the... It is a challenge that's going to have to be faced by the judiciary because politicians don't want to touch it at all. It is toxic for them. But you know, I wrote today that over the years, policymakers have continued to take a stab at the symptoms and not the cause. The cause of the pension crisis to come, and there will be a crisis. There's absolutely no doubt about it. The math you just described cannot go on in perpetuity. But the cause is the fact that there are unreasonably high rate of return assumptions. Yeah, I've mentioned this before. One of the most amazing things I learned when I visited the UK is that public pension assumed rate of returns are capped at 3.5%. If that's not the case, and they're 7.5% or 8% as they are at a public pension here in Texas, then you're going to force pension managers to aim for the fences. So if you bring down the amount of money that you assume has to be brought in, well, then you have to start writing much bigger checks as states and municipalities, which, by the way, is impossible. So I've talked myself into a corner. Which brings us back to where I started with this, which is the judiciary. There will be haircuts in the future, and it will not be welcome news to people who, in good faith, understood themselves to be retiring at a certain level of a fixed income until they die. It's not going to be pretty.
No, it's not going to be pretty, and which brings us to there's two things, one being that We're starting to see a lot of violence in this country, which to me, and I've said this for a couple of years, that if we don't do something quickly, there's going to be another revolution. And I think that we're seeing part of the revolt now. I mean, you know, we can call it whatever we want, but, you know, people, when they're hungry and they can't eat, they can't make money, they somehow find a way to create violence and trouble. And I think this is just the start. What are your thoughts?
Well, okay, so look at it this way. If there are issues that are going to be faced by the public pension system, theoretically, those same issues are going to be faced by people who are not necessarily depending on a defined benefit plan taking care of them into their final years of their lives. They're also going to equally affect every American who's been honestly paying into a 401k plan for years and years throughout their careers, who are depending upon the income that it generates. Because what takes down public pensions will equally take down 401k plans, which, by the way, continue to be populated with funds that carry high fees and a lack of true choices to be made if you even want to try and be prudent as you near retirement. So I think it's not necessarily the firefighter and the policeman who have their pension cut. They'll be mad, don't get me wrong. But I think you will have a middle-income, middle-class uprising in this country the next body blow they take to their 401k.
And I could agree with that because, again, you know, life comes down to two things. One of them is money. And, you know, you start, you know, you work your ass off your whole life to be in a position. And all of a sudden, oh, I'm not in that position. And, I mean, you can see that happening in the school pensions. I mean, I know in the state of Illinois, the state has not funded the school pension since 1999. You know, and there's issues everywhere. And they're not going away. And what we're seeing is a meltdown everywhere. But as we move on to it, we also have issues in commercial real estate, which we talked about a little bit earlier. Go ahead and finish your thought there, please.
Well, look, there's a cottage industry in Cute right now. people joke about, oh, well, the B and the C malls in the secondary and tertiary markets are going to die a slow death, but they'll be replaced by movie studios or distribution facilities or community colleges. And so people sit around and play a game of guess what the mall is going to be retrofitted as next. That's all good and well until companies like Macy's start to announce not 14 stores being closed in 2014, not 15 stores being closed in 2015, but 100 stores being closed by early 2017. Those kinds of numbers, and you start to really ponder a huge oversupply issue that's going to come in contact with an extremely overvalued commercial real estate bubble in the coming years that, by the way, pensions are throwing money at hand over foot, hoping to make those rate of return assumptions work.
The hell they're advertising them now, because you know you get, you want to be one of the realtors that holds the lease for Walgreens, who keeps building stores everywhere, and of course you get 6%. I mean, obviously there's a ton of problems, and one of the problems, you know, we've never talked about precious metals. I don't even know if you what you're interested in them or not, but I want to ask you, you know, last week Deutsche Bank did not honor some redemptions for some paper gold. And now Michael Lewis, the writer of Flash Boys and some other crap that he wrote, but he wrote they're now looking into bringing out another gold ETF. And I believe that there's not enough gold to cover the paper gold that's out there now. And I think that gold will start to move higher, because with all the problems, people are going to start to run there. Now, it's not happening yet, and I'm not one of those guys that's saying it's going to 10,000. I just think that there may be a little bit of a run here, because I think they're oversold, and I don't think there's enough to cover all the paper that's out there. Any thought to that?
Well, I certainly do think that gold is your primary candidate going forward, especially the nearer we get to the election and uncertainty around it. You'll notice the poll numbers are getting tighter. I certainly think that gold is going to be your ultimate safe haven harbor, and that there will be a rush into it, and that if there's an inadequate amount of paper, as you're describing, that there's very much the possibility that you could see prices spike.
And, you know, so these are some of the problems we create ourselves. And, you know, the last thing I want to ask you is, I believe that the auto industry has sold their soul to the devil, and will not see growth for an extended period of time because of the supposed 0% interest, which is really 7%, but nobody won't tell anybody that, but that really is an interest rate hidden under there. But I think they've sold their soul. What do you think?
I think that they have pulled demand so far forward that they continue, again, to compare the last generation's numbers to this generation. Well, I got news for them. You know, millennials are going to be renters for a lot longer because of some of the things that we have discussed just now. And I think that, and look, I've got a 12-year-old, and I think he'd be more interested in the latest iPhone than he would be in getting his driver's license, and he won't be alone. There's a cultural shift going on in this country, and automakers have pulled forward more demand using slippery financing. It's a problem that nobody is recognizing, but by the same token, even as anemic as economic growth has been during this quote-unquote recovery, it's been one of the main supports for this recovery. So you tell me what's going to happen going forward, given what the auto sector has already done to itself.
Daniel DiMartino Booth, Money Strunk, thank you so much. We look forward to your book on Valentine's Day, Fed Up. Thanks for being on today.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is the Bubba Show, Top of Horse. That was Danielle DiMartino Booth. Awesome. You got to catch her on Fox. Get her book, Fed Up. That'll do it for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same station. This is the Bubba Show, Top of Horse. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We'll seal it.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.